Yo, what is up, everyone? Welcome back to Tag Team, Pokemon Trading Card Game's premier podcasting trio. My name is Riley Holbert, joined as always by my good friends, Mr. J.B. Crewall, Mr. Andrew Mahone. Folks, how are we hanging today?
Hey, I'm doing really well, Riley. Getting my sun on here in Columbus. We had like a snowstorm over the weekend. Andrew, you probably hit this as well. And then today it was 60 degrees. It was beautiful.
Yes.
You go ahead, Andrew.
Yes, it was. It was very nice. Natalie and I went for a walk yesterday, but it was very brisk. It was like upper 30s, lower 40s. But today was great. So, I mean, it's definitely feels like the weather's starting to turn, which is fantastic. And, you know, just living the Pokemon dream.
So true. Yeah, I mean, it's you guys probably get weather like a day or two after it comes through Wisconsin. So yesterday it was really nice. It was in like the 40s, 50s, and then today it was kind of, it was like 60s plus. So y'all probably are getting even warmer weather tomorrow, if I had to guess, versus today. It was really nice. We played a lot of Pokemon Go yesterday, my girlfriend and I, which was awesome. We love kind of walking around the parks and playing when it's nice outside.
I didn't know she was a Go head.
Yeah, that's like the one Pokemon thing that she's into is Pokemon Go. It's funny, like, the stuff you learned by only playing Pokemon Go is like very silly, you know. We were talking about, oh, we need like a steel type Pokemon for this quest, and she's like, oh, is Pikachu a steel type? It's like, well, no, but you know, I appreciate your effort there.
Alolan Pikachu?
It's well, there is not Alolan Pikachu.
Delta species.
There Pikachu. Is a Delta Pikachu that is.
There metal is a type. Metal type. Pikachu, yes, Delta species card. I actually was playing Pokemon Go yesterday as well. Natalie and I are seasonal Pokemon Go players and seasonal Pokemon Go enjoyers. We will not play if it's too cold, and I refuse to play out of my car because it's dangerous. And also, you're supposed to be Pokemon Go, all right? You're supposed to go with your feet and walk somewhere.
It's definitely not Pokemon Sit.
No, it's definitely not Pokemon Sit in your car.
There is Pokemon Sleep. That's its own game.
But I think, so it's starting to be prime Pokemon Go days again. We're going to talk about post-rotation a little bit today, but I do have a tweet from Joe Omnipoke that I think is just a good icebreaker, good topic starter for the stream. I've linked the tweet here in the Discord for you guys to see. Joe asks, which format, since Scarlet and Violet's release, did you find to be your favorite? Was it the, what's BST? Is that
Battle Styles.
Yes. Battle Styles to Scarlet and Violet. Was it Battle Styles to Paldea Evolved? Was it Battle Styles to Obsidian Flames or Battle Styles to Paradox Rift? Reigning at the top of Battle Styles to Scarlet and Violet, you had Lost Box at the top with Lugia not far behind and Mew in third place. For Battle Styles through Paldea Evolved, you had Gardevoir at the top with Lost Box in second, Lugia in third with Fusion Mew behind and fourth. Then through Obsidian Flames, you had Lost Box at the top, Lugia, Gardevoir, and Maridon peeking in there at fourth. And then through Paradox Rift, you had Teen at the top, Charizard, Gardevoir in third, and Roaring Moon in fourth. Out of those four formats, do you guys have any fond memories of any of them as we kind of, you know, work towards the new post-rotation format?
Honestly, I feel like usually formats kind of peak in the middle point of their lifespan. So what I mean by that is, like, the Scarlet and Violet format is very restrictive in its card pool, right? Like, the first format of a post-rotation tends to be the most restrictive of the formats. And, you have goofy stuff like Arceus Duraludon is, like, a top threat in that format, which I don't think is very entertaining to play or play against. But then in the latter stages of a format's lifespan, you have so many cards that it's either have these decks that are like at insane power levels because they have access to way too many tools, or you have just like so many decks to deal with that it's like almost exhausting to prepare for a tournament because you never know what your day is going to look like. That said, I think the format personally did peak at Paradox Rift amongst the post rotation for this year, which is not always the opinion that I have. I just feel like the decks were the most interesting at that point in the format. You know, comparing it to like Obsidian Flames when you're looking at like Lugia as a top contender, and base Scarlet and Violet, which I didn't think was particularly interesting at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be through Obsidian Flames, right?
Obsidian Flames for Maridon?
Yeah. From Maridon. I mean, that was like,
because that's the format he won the regional. No, it's, I mean, it's the best, most skill intensive format
of all time, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. A fourth and a first? I don't know.
You asked if he had any fond memories, and he does.
Yeah, and okay. Then you flamed me. And then you literally flamed me for it.
For he opened the door and then kicked your shin when you walked through it. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't have
I set him up. I set him up perfectly.
I don't have to speak anymore. No, I mean, I thought that was really fun. I felt like there was some comeback potential. I felt like the decks were roughly, you know, even in power level. I felt like there was a lot of different techs that you could play to address your bad matchups. I thought that format was pretty balanced.
Yeah, I think that that's it's just interesting to take a look back. My fondest memory in I think it was actually before Silver Tempest came out. Or like, no, right when Silver Tempest came out, right? I don't know.
Well, that's not really in this set of formats at all.
I know, but I'm thinking, because I liked the format just before Scarlet and Violet better than all of these, I think. You know, when we first started playing Double Turbo Mew, I think it was right before Silver Tempest came out, right?
That was pre-Silver Tempest,
Yes. So right before Silver Tempest, that was like, in recent memory, that was my favorite time to be playing. Going in with Double Turbo Mew and people were trying to play like Kirin VMAX and all that stuff was like awesome. Yeah. And before people kind of really understood the power level of the Double Turbo Mew deck, I think like that was the most fun in recent memory that I had playing. So that wasn't this past fall, but the fall before. That was a lot of fun.
I mean, I really enjoyed Paradox Rift prior to Roaring Moon spiking up in popularity. you know, and mostly because I thought the Urshifu deck was just insanely fun and really skill intensive, and there's so many cool plays you could make. I felt like a mastermind every tournament that I played that day. And then like Roaring Moon just kind of rips that entirely out of viability, but that's fine. Yeah. So when I think of like cross sections of a format, that's when I was having the most fun in the post rotation world.
And then one more question, kind of before we get diving into our post rotation dissertation of sorts, when we kind of air out all of our opinions, speculations, and our takes on decks and what decks we think are going to show up to EUIC. How do you think that this rotation will compare to last year's rotation? I mean, let's take a look at, you know, where the format kind of was last year before rotation. I mean, we had Lugia dominating, right? I mean, just almost everything. Lugia was just this powerhouse that could not be stopped. And then rotation happens. And more or less, Lugia kind of still, even though it lost a lot, it felt like it lost an arm and a leg. But even with one arm and one leg, it was still just like absolutely dominating. So, you know, do you think that this upcoming rotation will change things more or less, and how so, than last year's rotation?
I mean, I don't think any deck, there's no deck that like survives post rotation that will transform in the way Lugia has, besides maybe Gardevoir, you can make the case for, but I think Gardevoir just kind of doesn't survive altogether with the drop off of Curlia. But we're seeing like these whole archetypes that are just kind of being ripped out of the picture. You know, anything that involves a battle style that is. So Fusion Strike and Rapid Strike, primarily getting rid of both of those. Rapid Strike's kind of fallen off, so it's really just Mew being removed from the picture, and then a couple of miscellaneous cards that are relevant to other decks. You know, Curlia is probably the most relevant of those. I think a lot of people are kind of ready to see Mew's farewell. Mew is not the same dominant force it has been historically at this point in the format, but you know, it's nice for a change. And then we have Path to the Peak leaving, but I'm not even sure, like, it's not like Path stocks are super high right now outside of Giratina, and Giratina is the most popular deck in the format, I guess, but you know, I don't know. I just don't think this will be as transformative of a rotation compared to last year.
It's a lot of lateral moves, right? You think about the top decks from
that's a good next good format. Word for it.
You think about some of the top decks for next format. You know, you have your Golden Goes, your Chen Pao's, your Charizards, your Lost Boxes, Arceus decks, Stall decks. Of course, you're getting some new archetypes. Lugia is still in there, so it's like a lot of the same. I think is going to be up at the top. Just again, lateral moves. You're missing minor pieces. Battle VIP is substituted now with the buddy Poffin. We lose Path, of course, but there's plenty of other good stadiums, even some disruption stadiums that decks might play. So yeah, it's a lot of lateral moves. I see a lot of these decks is pretty much remaining at the same power level that they were in this current format post rotation, but just substituting out some of those cards that they now don't have access to.
And I think that potentially some of the reason for that is just the obscene power level of the Pokemon V-Star mechanic and Pokemon V-Stars in general. Even just looking at kind of the early results from Japan, the Champions League in Fukuoka, we had Lugia V-Star, Arceus V-Star, Giratina V-Star, all showing up. And we're talking about of like the last four Sword and Shield sets, right? I mean, that is kind of like the poster V-Star from three of them. You have Palkia is not present in this list, but like Golden Go does play Palkia and could have very well been in the top 16 of this Champions League as well. So like, but you basically have every poster V-Star from the last four Sword and Shield sets is still out there absolutely slugging, while you have decks like Gardevoir EX vanished, Maridon EX not present, right? I think the V-Stars were incredibly powerfully designed, and we're kind of seeing that now in the post-rotation format, those cards still kind of clinging to power, especially in a more limited pool.
I think another like interesting aspect of this rotation is the sets that we're losing are basically all battle styles sets. You know, it was cards that supported the various battle styles for multiple sets in a row, and so like consequently the card pool was like very focused, so to speak. Like the sets were only designed to support like these two archetypes, three archetypes, you know, single strike exists. And then once, you know, rotation happens, they all just kind of go in one blast. Whereas compared to like last year, there was all these like miscellaneous kind of various cards, but it was not as much like a focused set of archetypes across multiple sets. You know, you had the, Darkness Ablaze, like Eternatus type thing going on. And then that was like it, you know, but like in terms of like self-contained decks that were lost, whereas basically every set in this rotation is a self-contained strategy all at once. Although I do think the V-Star point is super valid. It kind of reminds me back when GXs were new, and you would just slam, you personally, Andrew, you would slam a GX into any deck and like because you want to take advantage of that core game mechanic, you know. And, and a V-Star power is, I think, categorically stronger in most cases than the GX attack was, and often easier to use because there's abilities. So it's like, why wouldn't you take advantage of them?
Yeah, it's
good. I can't believe, did I really used to do that?
Yeah.
It makes sense, yeah. Heck yeah, well, Cephalon GX just takes a prize, bro.
Yeah, like Cartana, you have to put something
in
there.
Do you not want to take a prize?
I mean, that was like half the reason you played the Turtonator in the Zoroark deck.
No, it wasn't. I know it wasn't.
Yes, it was. I used it for Shell Trap, bro.
Yeah, it was for Metagross.
you wanted the flame burst or whatever.
No, I did not want a nitro tank.
Nitro tank.
Or as I used to call it, nitro spank. I did not want a nitro spank, bro.
You could with the rainbow, though.
And they reported that on, and that's actually funny lore from the top eight of that NAIC. The Pokemon Company International reported on my top eight deck that saying I included the Turtonator to use Nitro Tank GX, which had no utility in my deck whatsoever. I did have a rainbow energy, but that's not what it was for.
You could flip your counter, though.
I could, technically. A much more useful GX attack was the Tapu Lele GX.
I still maintain we should have played the Tauros. That was a better card. Because it had the GX attack was basically an outrage attack.
Tauros is so mad, dude.
No,
you
but it
used,
did the same
you
thing.
Used
it did
Rampas.
It did 64-1 energy. It did 64-1 energy.
You did big wheel, bro. Big wheel, big wheel. It was all about the big wheel.
You had to dead big drawn. Wheel most games.
You dead drawn. Let me see 10.
Half our listeners don't have any clue what we're talking about, so let's shift the conversation back to post-rotation. So, of course, we've talked about some of the results of that big tournament in Japan. Lugia winning. Had a pretty, I mean, I would say kind of an odd top 16. No Goldengo, no Chen Pao. Those seem to be on at least my top of mind from this current format. And certainly in Japan, there have been formats in the past where Chen Pao has seemed to be all over the place. So I'm curious about that. But if you've tested post-rotation or if you've watched content for post-rotation, what are you guys liking from your experiences?
I have done quite a bit of testing in post-rotation and got to kind of see the results from this Champions League. But from my own experiences, I really am liking the one-hit KO decks like Chen Pao and like Golden Go. Those decks seem very strong to me, especially if you look at the results of the Champions League. I mean, you're looking at like Lugia at the top, Arceus at the top, Charizard at the top, right? And you're thinking like, okay, well, what decks can handle those threats? You know, a deck that can one-hit KO things like Golden Go or like Chen Pao seems pretty well-positioned. I do think that Snorlax Doll, serious threat. I mean, that deck definitely showed up. You got 3 in the top 16, 2 in the top 8 of the Fukuoka Champions League, so that's something to think about too, and a great Tusk Mill deck. But I really was preferring those one hit KO style decks, the Chen Pao and the Golden Go, to not see them in the top 16 does have me scratching my head a little bit and asking, you know, is there anything that I'm kind of missing about why those decks underperformed?
Yeah, it's interesting because you look at the top 16 breakdown, and at least one of my natural inclinations is a deck like Goldengo would perform very well into that landscape. You know, the Arceus decks seem fine. You know, the Vulpix maybe could be annoying. The Charizard decks are, you know, part of the reason you play Goldengo in the first place. The Lugia decks seems fine. You know, the Lugia deck honestly seems kind of fraudulent to me. You're playing so many Pokemon that need to evolve, plus the Archeops. Like, I don't know. That seems fraudulent. And then you have, like, these Giratina decks, which are whatever. So, the absence to me is odd. It almost feels like we're just died in the middle of the tournament for not really any reason. It just, like, happened to take a loss, and you can't really take a single loss in these Japanese tournaments, and that's just it. I think that's why you see the decks that you see in Japan do really well, right? Like the Arceus decks pretty much do the same thing every game. The Snorlax deck does the same thing every single game. The Lugia deck probably does the same thing most games. Maybe. It's playing Master Ball. I think for me personally, like the Stall deck just seems like the top dog of the format still. And I think the Lugia deck definitely has a good matchup into it. But I just said that I think the Lugia deck is fraudulent. So, you know, that's not really a demerit in my
opinion. Dude, the Lugia deck is fraudulent, man. Like, I've played this thing. It is not, It is not what I thought. It does not feel like a tournament winning deck. It feels very
it's got Master Ball.
It is a tournament winning deck, buddy.
It does not feel like a tournament winning deck.
Yeah, yeah.
It has some glaring weaknesses that we all know. I mean, the Lugia deck, like, to get a turn two attack with something that can one shot an opponent's Pokemon sometimes is gonna be a little bit tough, right? And so there's a lot of things about the deck that I don't love. Sometimes you have to discard some of your Mincino pieces, and so you're only able to get one Mincino, and then you're struggling to do one shots because that's your only vehicle to one shot in the mid and late game. So you talk about these V-star matchups, sure, you might be able to go through one, but if you're not able to generate that second Mincino, that second Cinchino, you're not going to be able to go through two, and then your opponent can just kind of overwhelm you from there. So I have really not been that impressed with the Lugia deck. It's felt clunky most of the time, and not even that good in the matchups that I think it would be good.
I mean, let's just look at it by the numbers, right? Like, you got a 2020 deck, basically, which is already tough. Like, you're already operating.
What he means by that is it's like a third Pokemon, a third trainers, and a third energy.
2023-17
narrowly avoiding the accusations. And what makes 2020 like extra funny is that's how they used to build theme decks, you know, the decks that you buy off the rack at Target for $9 to have the worst game of Pokemon in your life with your friends. Like, that's like the level of distribution Lugia is operating on. Of its supporter lineup, it plays five draw supporters, what, two Serena and a Jack, which is a do nothing supporter. Like, what are you trying to do?
Two evolutions from the deck, excuse me. All right,
and so, you have Ultra Ball in hand, like, like, this deck, it has to be trying to call second and like read the win turn one. Like, that's its optimal turn one,
might be.
I think so. Yeah, that's how it's spelled.
I don't know, man.
That's how it's spelled because, like, well, one of the problems that I've found with the deck is that it's just so hard to get out Pokemon. It's really hard to get your Pokemon out. Like, you can't find your basics. It's hard to find on that first turn, like, three or more basics to fill your bench, to have the ideal attacker for what you want to do in the following turns. I mean, I completely agree with you, Riley. Like, it just does not early game feel like worth its salt. Like, it's just, I can't describe how disappointed I've been with this Lugia deck, with the build from the winning list. It just really is not where I think a deck should be in this post rotation format. It's not consistent. And then you compare it against some of the other decks that I have liked. I mean, Chen Pao is like kind of insane. I really think Chen Pao is tier one deck material that sets up beautifully. Every game, you're drawing a ton of cards. You have the search with the Irida to just pick out everything that you need on the turns that you need it. Even slow starts are not so bad in this format. We talked about this before. VIP, you're really hinging on with those setup decks to have that in your hand turn one. Now you can afford to just end the first turn with a single Frigibax on the bench because you know it's not getting roped up, and you can find on the next turn or subsequent turns the Buddy Buddy Poffins. I think that deck, to me, is tier one, and that's kind of the format-defining deck in the early stages of this format.
Yeah, that actually led well into my question, and I want to pose it to both of you since you also mentioned Chen Pao, Andrew. The Tag Team Podcast has been a known Chen Pao hate task force, right? Like, when there's a need for Chen Pao hate, like, we get dropped into that situation to make sure that Chen Pao gets taken down. So both of you have mentioned being fond of Chen Pao. I'm curious, like, it's not like Chen Pao really gained anything per se, like, added to its pool. Well, like, transformative. Yeah, Prime Catcher.
I think the Poffins are a bigger deal than, like, it's not a one-to-one from the, it's not a one-to-one from VIP.
Right. And so what I'm saying is, like, what is that transformative factor? Is that other decks have fallen down, or is it that Chen Pao is, like, stayed stable enough across the metagames? Like, what is it?
I think it's both. I think that Chen Pao, first of all, has got huge pile energy, with all those cross switchers in it. Like, my God. I mean, just like absolute pile energy. You're talking about a deck that wants to play Bibarel and cross switchers. Holy.
Were people playing cross switchers in like more recent?
Yeah, games? Owen played
it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they are. And canceling club. All
I guess,
that.
I guess Owen did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're going for it all, baby. They want
I feel everything. Like it's super variable, though. Like,
sure. Watch. But it definitely has big pile energy. And yeah. There's no real consensus on how to solve it. You're either playing the pile or you're trying to dilute the pile a little bit. Either way, you got some big pile stuff going on, and it's hard to fit like the cross switchers with the iron hands and yeah. like to do all of that successfully. Whereas when you get to simplify the deck and yeah. cut all those cross switchers and just play a prime catcher, which already slots perfectly into the deck's engine with Irida, you can Irida for the prime catcher. It's a switch and a gust all at once. You can also play the Iron Hands successfully alongside Prime Catcher, and you kind of all of a sudden you've got the yeah. Prime Catcher canceling yeah. Cologne play, you've got the Iron Hands play, yep. you've got the one hit KO play,
yep.
and with every other deck in the format getting just slightly worse, they are gunning for your Baxcalibur turn two slightly less.
You're,
you know,
and yeah. you're forgetting Andrew. I think you're forgetting actually the biggest weapon that Baxcalibur has, and that is the Greninja. Being able to Greninja snipe multiple yeah, times.
I was going
to
say the Greninja.
I think
as well.
That's actually the biggest threat in the format right now because, you know, you can pick off the things that your opponent's trying to set up. It forces them to get out of mana fee, which of course no deck really wants to do. And we're talking about kind of general power levels being maybe a little bit lower. For most decks right now in this post-rotation world. So I think like the back-to-back, it sets up the Iron Hands if you're playing that, right? You could snipe something and, you know, maybe if it doesn't go down in one hit, you can follow it up with an Iron Hands. Like, I think it's just so, so good right now to be able to snipe multiple times with Greninja. I think that's like the best weapon the deck has.
It's one of the reasons I really like Golden Go. Also, just yeah. because it has the potential for the Radiant Greninja play with Palkia. Can't fire them off back-to-back turns necessarily.
You can.
Like, you can. You have to accelerate three, attach one from hand, and you could do it. But it takes a little bit more finessing. But yeah, so that is one of the things I've really enjoyed about Golden Go recently. Looking at, again, I know Joe Omnipokes, we're doing a lot of post-rotation content, so I'm kind of on his Twitter feed right now. But looking at some of the posts that he's made about City Leagues from the middle of the month, February 15th, he was saying that Charizard has won a third, 33% of Japan's City Leagues. And the preferred Charizard variant is Charizard Bibarel with Charizard Pidgeotto EX coming in just slightly behind it. Now, I think that we all kind of can agree that Charizard does still seem like the top dog to beat. I mean, one of the reasons we like decks like Chen Pao and Golden Go is because Charizard's that deck, right?
No.
JLV's shaking his head, but no. I think I largely agree.
No, I think Charizard kind of sucks.
You think Charizard sucks? Well, all right then, buddy. Tell us why.
Well, certainly the Bibarel engine is not good. You have some prizing issues that you can you have prizing issues that you can run into, right? If you're obviously you can tailor your deck to try to accommodate for that, but in terms of playing, you know, all these one ofs that you're trying to see, especially like finding the TM evolution, if you're only playing one, it's only good on that first turn, really. I just have not been really impressed with the Bibarel version. Now, we talk about lateral moves, we talked about that earlier, like. To me, it does feel like Charizard with Pidgeot stays, you know, roughly in that tier one sphere. But I don't think it's like a high tier one. I would put it somewhere like low tier one, high tier two. Again, you're looking at a meta that I personally see as being dominated by Chen Pao, at least early from my initial results. And I don't think that plays very well in Charizard's favor.
Where was it?
I don't know. I'm trying to like rack my brain because I actually do not know why Chen Pao did not perform, because in my testing, Chen Pao has far and away been the best deck, handily beating the Charizards. Handily, because you have much easier access to the Prime Catcher Cologne play to like bop two Charmanders. And it's surprisingly easy to get the you know, to get the Radiant Greninja early, right? Well, on like tier, so, turn two. I don't know why. I can't really.
I mean, if I'm just gonna, I just want to build down the through line of Charizard versus Chen Pao a little bit here. So, you know, going off the same like Joe Omnipoke stats, for example, you know, you got Charizard and Pidgeot like far and away the deck with like the most winningness City League deck.
Sure.
Charizard Pidgeot's also not far behind, and the two of them combined like completely blow every other deck out of the water. Like, to me, Chen Pao absolutely is like a top contender, but to me, part of the fact that it is a top contender is the fact that it's like taking a good matchup into the most popular, if nothing else, deck in Charizard. And I don't see a reason why Charizard, as like the most popular or one of the most popular decks today, why that would change. You know, if I could just roll up with like 50 of the cards that I was already playing and play my Charizard deck.
Sure.
Because again, the Pidgeot deck is still incredibly popular and very winning. Like, why wouldn't I just do that, you know, if I've been a Charizard player right now?
Such winning.
So to me, a selling point of Chen Pao is the fact that Charizard is so good.
And something that I had also read on X is that I saw a player breaking down why the B-Braille version has been the more popular version of Charizard. And one of the selling points is that you can go TM Evolution into the 100 hit point Charmeleon and just not even really care about Radiant Greninja at all. And
that's,
Bidoof has bench barrier
that's
built in.
It's not real though, right? Because
it's not real. Oh, then what's all this? What's all this, huh? All these results.
Prime Catcher, bro. I'm gonna evolve into my 100 HP Charmeleon. Oh, I think I'm safe. Okay, Prime Catcher, your 100 HP Charmeleon. Boom, bop that, bop the Charmander on the bench. It's so easy. I'm like drawing pure fire with Chen Pao. I think this deck is like the deck that I'm convinced I'm running it. You know, at Orlando, I think the deck is cracked beyond belief. And I have had no problems with Charizard. What, like, it's not even like, oh, it's kind of a close game. Like, I haven't lost to a Charizard deck.
So then what other decks are there? Okay, Chen Pao probably takes a good matchup into Charizard.
So, yeah,
Charizard,
you're looking at
is
so Chen Pao,
the most popular deck.
Chen Pao into Charizard,
you know,
is good.
Does it have any weaknesses? Are there any other decks that we're not looking at? We're talking about a very binary format right now, and surely the format is more than two decks.
Charizard and Lugia is very good. Stall is the question mark, right? That's where I view Chen Pao as being kept in check, is by how much stall there is. I do feel like stall for next format, I've seen a lot of players hype it up on X or just individual content creators talking about how good stall is, especially in the limited format that we have. Like, it feels like the ratio of good cards for stall in how limited our format is like higher than it's been in a long time. So it does feel like stall is going to be a good deck, and I would expect players to start picking it up again. I think it's just gained a lot of traction from people talking about it. Obviously we have the results from Japan to kind of back up what people think about stall in the new format, and so I would expect like the meta share of stall to just start increasing, you know, incrementally. It's not going to ever be a top three deck, but certainly more well represented, because I think there's a lot going for it.
Yeah, I also think stall in general is kind of on the rise relative to its own archetype already with the Snorlax stall. I felt like a lot of people, just random people, picking up that deck, which you wouldn't see with like a Regigigas stall back in the day. It's also just a little more straightforward than some of the other stall decks in history. Like, you still got to be thoughtful about your plays and moves, but just the block win condition against some decks is just so simple that it makes it like really easy to pick it up and start learning, because you can start practicing around those win conditions, and then you start being able to find them, you know?
Yes. Snorlax stall does feel like baby's first control deck, or baby's first, you know, stall deck. I mean,
it does. That's too simplistic.
No, it does. It literally has the block thing. You're talking about like the wacky smacky dude, or you're talking about like that that crazy, you know, Vileplume deck we played. Like, you know, this Block Snorlax, it literally has the Wingcod built into the card. You're just trying to gust something up, and you're out of switches.
IGW, that has to be the one of the only decks where you can win on startup.
Yeah, flip over the first.
Literally, your opponent just flips over the wrong card, yeah. And you're like, I win. Your opponent opens Squawkamelee, like, shame on you.
Shouldn't have done that.
It does. And I'm not saying it takes no skill to play. It does. But as far as control decks go,
well, the learning curve
is one of the most accessible ones. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's got a more straightforward 100%. Learning curve, is what I'm going for. So, yeah, I see Stahl being at one of its peaks.
Yeah.
You know, where does that put Stahl in, like, the grander scheme of a metagame share for a tournament? It's hard to say, but I think, relatively speaking, it'll probably be the most popular it's ever been.
Yeah, would agree with that. Speaking of things that are more popular than there have ever been, it's time to introduce our presenting sponsor of the Tag Team Pokemon Podcast, and that is, of course, Manscaped. Manscaped is the premier place to get all of your men's grooming needs taken care of, from the ear and nose hair trimmer to the lawnmower 4.0 to all of their various shower gels and products and shampoos and conditioners and perfumes, I guess, scents, you could say. They have everything that that you need to stay looking and feeling your best.
So lawnmower 5.0 now, bud.
That's true. It
five.
Is lawnmower 5.0.
We've turned it up to 5.
We've gotten to level 5.
That's right.
Let's be honest, folks. The lawnmower 5.0 is the ace spec of men's grooming care. Like, you need to get this thing. It is for serious. You want to be irritating for this in your grooming care when you're in that shower looking to take care of yourself. Just go check it out. And the great thing is, we at Tag Team, we're going to spot you on this, okay? So if you head on over to manscaped.com and use code Tag Team at checkout, you get not only 20% off, but also
free shipping.
That's right, baby. And nobody pays for shipping in 2024. I've been saying that since 2022, I think. So, you know, definitely not in 2024.
Yeah, for sure.
Give me a break here. So pick up your ace spec, enhance your deck with Manscaped.
Thank you so much to Manscaped for sponsoring the cast.
Okay, so we spent a lot of time on Chen Pao and Charizard there. We give a little bit of airtime to Snorlax. That's like touching like a third of the decks that are just in the Japan Champions League top 16. Are there any other archetypes that are exciting you guys right now, or are we really feeling that the one-hit KO machine is leaving the station?
I guess decks that I'm excited about, I mean, really, the decks that I'm excited about, Golden Go, Chen Pao. Actually, I kind of disagree with JW. I'm going to be JW's foil on the Lugia front. I think the Lugia Chinchito deck kind of rocks, okay? It's got that one-hit KO potential that I love. It, you know, once you get the Archeops out, then you're just home free, baby. Really, the whole world opens up.
I don't know if you are, though.
It's not like that.
And
it doesn't actually work out like that.
I will say it takes a little bit of a hit because you don't have Professor Burnett anymore. All right, that was a tough loss. Losing Quick Ball last rotation, that was tough. Then we got Professor Burnett, and you know what? We made do for a year with Professor Burnett. Now with no more Professor Burnett, Jacques is like not quite cutting it, but that is just the Burnett replacement. People are playing that card just because they don't have Burnett, and they need a way to get two Archeops into the hand so that then they can discard them.
Jacques is just so funny.
I think that if you play like Squawkabilly or something, you can make the Jacques work, because all you got to do is you Luminia. I guess, are we Luminia and Squawkabilly are both those on the bench? Holy smokes.
The winning list,
you got to get your Mincino down too.
The winning list didn't even play the Squawk though, man. Like, I mean, I know there are things
ain't no
we
bench
play,
space
right?
For it.
Yeah, well, that's
true. You can't afford to have two support Pokemon.
Bro, you can't even find it, dude. It doesn't even matter. Like, you could play
Your Master Anything Ball else? Four.
Yeah,
we now, the Lugia deck rocks. It's better than you're giving it credit for.
No, it sucks. I kind of like it. It's horrible. It's
I hear what you're saying.
It will never win another. It will never win an event.
Another it already won.
Yeah, well, I said another. It will never win another event in certainly in the United States. I think it will not win a TPCI event.
Okay.
I'm kind of with JW on this, but I hear you, Andrew. I think it's probably better than JW's saying, but I think it also probably sucks.
I do think the deck that I'm most excited about outside of the ones that we've talked about is the Tusk Mill. But before we get to that, because I think the Tusk Mill is an interesting deck, it's worth talking about. We got a new mill strategy, and actually it's been putting up some results in Japan. Are those results legitimate? Is this archetype legitimate? Let me talk about the deck that I'm like negative excited for. The deck that I like actually it just creates a pit in my gut that I just it makes me loathe.
Oh, I'm so curious if it's the one I'm thinking of.
And just Arceus, bro. Like it's just Arceus, man. Yeah. Like I don't oh my gosh. Like I don't even know what year I'm looking at up here. You know, look at it. At three Arceus decks in top eight. You have to do some picking apart to be like, all right, well, I guess it can't be, you know, can't be this year. It has, what year? What format are we playing?
So it has to be pretty much.
There's not a single, if you look at the top eight decks from the Fukuoka Champions
Arceus
League,
can play a jock.
There's not a single archetype that features new cards from Temporal Forces on like the main
outside of
like,
the
picture.
Specs.
Just on the picture. I'm just talking about the sprites on Limitless, right? Well. There is no new Pokemon on the sprites, right? So just like your initial look is like there's nothing new here, right? And some decks have changed. I think there's a lot of lateral moves kind of as we had talked about. But you go deeper down in the top 16, you see some exciting stuff. We've got the Koridon and the single prize Roaring Moon and the Ancient Toolbox deck. And notably, the guy that stands out the most, more than anybody else on the sprite list, is the Great Tusk. Does it not?
I mean, it definitely stands out, yeah. But we were just saying that this deck is fraudulent, so.
Were we? The Tusk deck?
Last week, yeah.
I think the Tusk deck is real. I think the Tusk deck is real. I've played with it. I was thinking...
The switch up is crazy.
I know. I know what I said last week, and I think it's there. I think it's in the mix. I think it has some potential, and I really like the 12th place list from Japan, but I think there's even more variation that you go from there. But it's a real deck. I think it's viable. I've been impressed with it into certain matchups. Like I think Tusk is legit.
You were literally the guy, like,
I know,
flaming the Tusk.
I know, but I hadn't tried it, right? That was all speculation. Now that I've tried it, I'm not very high on it. It doesn't seem like it has the staying power. It seems very much like an early format. Nobody knows how to play against it. No decks are even considering it when they're deck building. And so, you know, the more the format goes on, it feels like it will, you know, lose the power, right? Just there's certain advantages of being kind of in an early format as opposed to a later format with this kind of deck. But yeah, I think it's real. I think it has a shot to, you know, make some noise.
I think the coolest thing about this Great Tusk list and the thing that kind of felt like it almost, you know, cracked the deck open for me was just the one of Comfy with the boards.
Yes, I love that.
What a sick little thing, right? Because I did feel like in testing the Great Tusk deck, I wasn't on the Comfy hype yet, but there are some times where it was like you need a little bit of extra dig, and even the Comfy just kind of gets you two cards further every
you know what it reminds
other
me
turn
of,
or so.
Andrew,
what's that?
It reminds me of the Pidgeotto in the Egg Row deck.
It does, and you know what? That Pidgeotto, it chugged.
It was
chugged
good.
Along.
It was good.
It was good.
You didn't need much. You know, and we also played, no, there was another card.
You needed something, right?
It reminds me of, I don't know if you played this one, Andrew, but there was a Lunatone back in the Donphan days of 2014.
Reorder your top two cards.
Yeah, reorder the top two.
I know what that
does. Yeah. And that was, it's like
fighting's those... best support in Gym Leader Challenge.
It's like the little incremental, you know, even like Raikou's like Fleetfoot, you know, I think there's a lot of these little incremental changes or incremental advantages that you can gain with some of these cards that are really kind of fun. Right. So,
because how massive is Fleetfoot and whatever Entei's version is it also Fleetfoot?
Yeah, they're all Fleetfoot. They're Fleetfoot. Yeah.
Oh, they're all Fleetfoot. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah, but how much of a game breaker can that be?
I mean, it's essentially like over the course of a game, you know, you're essentially playing another supporter. So.
Oh yeah.
You know. Yeah.
I mean, easily. So,
like Mew EX, right? Same thing with Mew EX. If you're drawing, you know, just a card or two every other turn or so, I mean, you're going to end up with like what, six, half dozen extra drawn cards throughout the game, and that can absolutely change the game.
Six or a half dozen.
I mean, you don't know which, but
whichever you prefer.
Yeah. I mean, you only have to comfy three times, and that's better than an Explorer's Guidance. So I told you all that Emergency Board would be good. As Floatstone at home.
That's true. Floatstone at home.
You were right, Riley.
Air Balloon at home.
I want to take us a little bit backwards to Arceus. You guys seem really down on Arceus. I'm cool. Like, I'd be cool to just jam an Arceus deck. Like, if I don't have to really, you know, we talk about how simple some of these decks are. Arceus certainly at the top of the list from what the post-rotation is looking like. Not a ton of decisions, but that's never stopped me before from playing an Arceus deck. And I think I would be completely content. You know, you see, all I care about is winning. And if I feel like Arceus gives me the best shot to do that, then that will be my choice for that tournament. But, you know, you're seeing a lot of Arceus certainly here.
I'm with you on the philosophy there. You got to admit, though, we're to the point where it's like 4-4 Arceus V-Star. Like, that sucks. Like, that's so lame.
Yeah, it is. It is, right? It is. But who cares, right? I mean, I just want the bag. I'm with you.
No, I care. I care.
Well, yeah. Andrew cares, but...
I care. I ain't playing that.
I gotta say, as well, like, we haven't given this deck any verbal time, but the, like, single prize Ancient Box deck, I think it's so freaking cool. Like, when the Roaring Moon and the Koridon were revealed, I'm like, these have gotta be the worst cards of all time, and... Like seeing them put up like any results is sick. And they are popular in Japan too. Like they're winning Champions Leagues or City Leagues and stuff.
Oh yeah. I think I've made this comparison before, and I think it kind of just it's the closest, you know, recent comparison that we have. Is it feels like Regigigas in a way. You just kind of have all these like really kind of bloated single prize Pokemon that are really annoying to knock out for, you know, one prize, especially when they have an Ancient Booster energy capsule attached, giving them 200 HP.
Yep.
And no, they don't always one hit KO things. They mostly two hit KO things, but there is the potential for one hit KO as the game wears on. And you can, with some careful play, eventually get to those numbers to take knockouts on V-Stars and things like that.
I think the one hit KOs are like perpetually out of reach pretty much, but I mean, you have like the Flutter Man,
bro. I've done it.
You can
hit 280. I mean,
things have to go, you can hit,
like, your ceiling is like 280 if everything goes perfect, but like I'm almost saying, like, it doesn't even matter. Like, you have the Flutter Man to stunt your opponent in the early game if you get that active at the right time, and you know, if you're able to like strike and throw with the Flutter Man, you don't need to even get one hit KO numbers. You just need to get like 20 shy of that, and like that's when you're working
never
with
attacking with that Flutter Mane, bro.
You definitely can
attacking with that thing.
You absolutely maybe can and will in some deck games. Yeah, like
yeah,
and like yeah, and I guess what I'm saying is more so like, do you even need to, right? Like, you're slowing your opponent down, you're coming out swinging with these like goofy single prizers, and like they have to have a strategy that could deal with that in the first place, which not every deck always can. I definitely think you'd be swinging with that Flutter Vane in some matchups, though.
It is. It is the premier one prize deck, in my opinion. But I don't know that really says too much.
Premier one prize attacking deck.
Snorlax
is the premier one prize.
Snorlax Stall is the premier one prize deck. sure. But, you know, in terms of... And that's not saying much, because I don't feel like one prizer's next format are particularly good. You still have Lost
Box. One prizers have been so fraudulent for so long.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that carries over. Like, I just don't see this deck. It is the best one prize deck. I've said that for a while. But it doesn't stack up to some of these high HP Pokemon. Especially, like, you think about Arceus decks that, you know, just can switch between all these different huge HP attackers and never really have anything in one-shot range until the end of the game. It makes it really tough.
Taking a look at some of these Lost Box lists we have here. I mean, not the Tina variants, just kind of the, you know, what's your general Lost Box, non-Tina Lost Box deck feel like post-rotation? There's a top eight list. It's got Roaring Moon EX, Iron Hands EX, Radiant Greninja.
Both of them are like a Paradox Box.
Yeah, for me it's a Paradox Box, right. Because, I don't think you can make a one-prize Lost Box deck work in the post-rotation format. I just haven't seen much success with it in the very, granted, limited testing that I've done with it. It just hasn't panned out with the results that I'd like. Because it just takes a little bit too long, and then if you're playing against a deck that has a Greninja in it, if they can pull that off, it gets really hard. They just accelerate the game so much. I really like the Paradox Box of the, you know, Lost Box decks. I think those have the best chance to win.
And yeah, I think that makes sense. You just have the best options with it.
Yep. Right.
What's crazy to me is that, you know, all this talk about Radiant Greninja kind of being this potential powerhouse, and the top placing decks that attack with Radiant Greninja are these Lost Box decks, not Chen Pao, right? So is there any validity to that?
It was an anomaly, bro. It's an anomaly, dude.
I love blaming things on anomaly or bad variants. I love that.
Bro. It's insane. If Chen Pao,
that's a play
format,
right out of my book for sure.
If Chen Pao next format has one fan, it is me, dude. I think that deck is so good.
I would love to not play Chen Pao personally.
I already have.
Me
my
too.
Own,
I am a huge hater on that deck. Still,
no,
I'm still bringing
good,
the hater energy,
dude. It's gonna be good. Get your shiny rare candy.
Wait,
get
does
your...
it play rare candy? It plays rare candy, right? Go ahead, say it. Say it.
Oh, this is rhetorical. I thought you were asking, but yes, it does, Andrew. It does.
And therefore, it's a bad deck. Yep.
Okay, so here's the issue. You're like, oh, it's a rare candy deck. Oh, it's going to be, I'm never going to play it. Okay, well, you're like kind of eliminating, you know, a large subsection of the decks. And then you don't want to play Arceus decks. So that's also kind
here's
of eliminating
the
a large
here's
subsection
the
of decks. I where are we, Andrew?
I do not like rare candy decks on principle. I spent a long portion of the early years of my Pokemon TCG career playing rare candy decks. Emboar, Blastoise. Oh, those two. Yeah. They're the big ones.
many, many
but
stage two decks.
In 2024, when you are using rare candy to evolve a Pokemon into play, that Pokemon better have over 300 HP. Okay? It better stick around. It better not just be like kind of like snapped from existence. And I loathe the very concept of Chen Pao, that you are relying on a stage two support Pokemon and then not giving yourself board position power by keeping your stupid energy in play. You have to discard them every time you attack. So you are constantly, every
single turn.
Man,
you were hyping Chen Pao like 40 minutes ago. What happened?
You were every single turn. I know. Well, now... I'm back to my old me. Every single turn, because you're too high on Chen Pao, JW. You need to be brought back down to reality a little bit.
Justice.
Every single turn.
Don't just do it for the content, Andrew. Just say how you really feel, bro.
You think this rant just came out of nowhere? No, it was bottled up, bro. It was in there whole time.
It's good, dude. I'm going to spend the rest of the pre-rotation, like, you know, preparation for EUIC, trying to get you guys to play this deck seriously, because I think it's the one, man. It's the one. Like, you ever put on a pair of jeans and You do the, you know, you do the button, you zip it up, and you look in the mirror and you're like, that's it. That's the name. That's Chen Pao. Chen Pao is a nice pair of jeans.
This is the same guy who, when I tried to bring up Chen Pao, when I tried to bring up Chen Pao to play at Worlds in 2023, you said, Andrew, I'm going to cut you off. Please, let's take this testing seriously.
Times have changed.
Same guy.
This same guy. Listen, if you can have
you were on the opposite side of this 40 minutes ago.
If you can have a change of heart in one podcast episode, surely I can have a change of heart in, you know, 8 months.
What I'm saying is Chen Pao's good. It's a good deck. No,
Chen Pao's cracked, dude.
I'm not willing to take it to that next level that you are.
Chen Pao's insane.
Which
Chen
is why I've started detracting.
It's insane. Tier S.
No. Tier 1, yeah. Uh-huh. You know, could be the play, sure. Locked in, 100% broken deck, the absolute play, BDIF. I'm going to be a little bit more skeptical of that. Didn't show up at the Fukuoka Champions League.
Who cares, bro? Maybe it lost all the, like, Toad Scroll stuff. And it's all best of one. Like, we, you know, everyone wants to rag on it. So I'm just going to jump on this train, right? It's like, oh, best of one. Anything can happen. That's why this format is, you know, that's why this way of playing the game is so stupid. No, I mean, I don't necessarily agree. But, you know, let's just hypothetically agree with those players that really hate best of one. It's just all variance. It just got, you know, bad luck that day. And
I feel like you don't even need to give those players a vote. Like, things are just, Japan always, the results never correlate that well.
They never correlate. Like,
never. You know, they're playing a different game than us for whatever reason. They just are. So
it's true.
You know, I don't put stock into, like, Chen Pao not showing up in Fukuoka as being, like, the damning nail in the coffin or anything. You know, I think it says something, but I don't think it's, like, a definitive statement either. It also could have just been not popular that day, for all we know. Who knows? I don't think Chen Pao is, like, so broken that you should know definitively right now that is the play for UIC either. So I think both of you are on egregious ends of a spectrum.
Well, I had to bounce to my end to counteract that.
Yeah, that's fair. And we need to bring balance to the force a little bit.
Right.
So,
or else it was going to be a runaway train Chen Pao flavor. Like, what the
heck? That's what I was afraid of that not that long ago. So.
Well, thank you guys for keeping me in check. I do need that at times.
You do. You do. We all do. We're pretty opinionated, ostentatious people.
JW's last few calls have been right on the money, though, so we'd be foolish not to listen to him.
Thank you, Andrew. Just please, I want to take this.
Actually, was it though? Like, Rory Moon was good, but it wasn't tournament winning good.
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was.
Tell There's still to the... a chance for him to prove us him to prove himself in correct.
Vancouver.
Well, he won't be proving anything.
I don't love the format. You know what's funny for Vancouver? I like Maradon more than Rory Moon.
The switch up again. None of y'all are loyal. This is crazy.
No, I think Roaring Moon is still good. The one of the things about Roaring Moon is that it's the best turn one attack, right, in the game. So there's always going to be room for that, I think. With the way that the game is currently played, I think there's always going to be room for that. But what I will say is that I've, even at locals on the ladder, you know, a lot of players hyping up Gardevoir and playing Gardevoir in different tournaments and things like this, you can't.
Yeah, that's what I'm like going through all the results on Limitless. Like, is Roaring Moon low key ass? Like, it doesn't have placements.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
I haven't looked at Play Limitless. I'm not gonna lie.
No, I'm just on regular Limitless. Like, go through real tournaments.
I was gonna say I have not looked at Play Limitless TCG, like the online tournament stuff. I've not looked at that website in months.
No, I just went through, like, the last month and a half of tournaments.
Nature is healing, bro.
Yeah.
That's for real.
Nature is healing. Holy, I, like, forgot that website existed for a second.
But actually, like, in the last month and a half of tournaments, and I get where you're going with this, video, is Gardevoir is everywhere, and Roaring Moon is nowhere to be seen. It's been eaten alive.
So I feel like Maraidon is that deck. You're taking a favorable matchup into Gardevoir. I think a favorable match been to Tina. I know there's maybe some discussion there to be had, but no worse than a 50-50 in my humble opinion. And then just solid matches across the board. You give yourself a shot against Roaring Moon. You give yourself a shot against some of these other kind of big basic decks. So I actually like more so than Roaring Moon. I wouldn't fault anybody for playing it, but I would feel much more comfortable going into Vancouver playing Maraidon than Roaring Moon, just given how the format's shaken up.
I feel that with kind of the direction the metagame's taken. Gardevoir is really popular lately.
It's super popular, dude. It's all over. I played a league challenge 2 days ago, which I got third in, by the way. And there were, I don't know, maybe 14 people, and six of them were playing Gardevoir. It was just stupid. It was one of the worst metagames. Yeah, and I played Roaring Moon, and I played two Gardevoir, and I beat them both. But
for the record,
I did beat two Gardevoir. The record show.
JW out there stealing championship points from the locals, making sure that none of them have a chance to qualify.
The Grinch. No, it's not even like
the
that.
Grinch.
This is literally my my second league challenge. This I don't know, like this current format. I played in like two prior to Worlds in August that technically counted for this year, but I did not mm-hmm. place at either of those. This is my first points from locals outside of a 7-person league cup.
Hey man, so, nice.
Thanks. Yeah, locals have been more, and I thought I was gonna go 0-2. I started started the day with my Roaring Moon deck against a Kyogre. Lost on Kyogre deck. I just got.
Man, you're really having a day out there.
Yeah, bro. It was horrible. I was like, man, I should have totally sleeved up Maraidon.
Almost. It's almost like Roaring Moon has no good matchups. It's exactly what I had been saying. I can't believe I showed up to this league challenge and I'm playing against meta decks. This is crazy.
I'll just ask Andrew.
No, we can't get back into this.
Scoreboard. We'll say that.
Oh,
yeah, the Knoxville.
But your score was.
And then
the Knoxville money just hit my bank account, so you can.
And then I'll get back up there, bro. Yeah, don't you worry.
Okay.
Yeah, all yeah.
Right. We'll see how it goes. Yep.
Oh yeah.
What do you, Vancouver, I guess last question, I guess, Andrew, what are you playing for Vancouver?
Man, that's a month away.
Yeah. What the?
Well.
What but I did just buy some Golden Ghosts.
Tell the people at home.
That's what I'm telling. And I've spent the last 3 days playing Golden Go. It's a deck that I'm very curious about, not just currently, but for post rotation, and it doesn't change a whole lot. So it's a deck that I want to have in my back pocket, just in case. It fulfills my no rare candy requirement. I love that about it. It also has 1K KO potential and can use Radiant Greninja. I like those things too. So I've just spent the last week or two becoming familiar enough with the deck that I feel like I could just snap play it at a tournament and not second guess myself, or not be like, wow, I'm vastly underprepared to like make a call like that. Whether it would be for Vancouver or EUIC, it's one of those like twofers. Like right now I get to kind of start practicing the deck and I could play it at either tournament and would feel very comfortable with it. So now I'm kind of looking at like, all right. And it's almost impossible for me to not group Vancouver and EUIC together, because I mean, EUIC is a bigger tournament. Vancouver is Vancouver. You know, it's fine. They're two different events. But if I could practice for a deck that's like going to be relevant for both, like if I could get reps in with Charizard, if I could get, you know, reps in with Chen Pao or something like that, it does feel sure. like that both those decks are, they're both options and they don't change a whole lot, right? So sure. it's like that practice in a lot of the matchups are going to remain pretty similar, right? I mean, because like the meta decks all pretty much stay the same. So like the testing that you do for Vancouver could also be valuable for EUIC, because the format doesn't change a whole lot.
That will conclude our episode today. I hope you guys all really enjoyed it. Have a great rest of your day. If you're listening to us early in the morning, if you're listening to us at night, have a great rest of your evening. It was really a pleasure to bring this episode.
Sleep
to you.
Well, listeners.
Sleep
Seriously.
Well. Sleep well. If you want to get more
what
involved.
What is this exit? My God.
We can edit it in post. if you want to get more involved in the podcast, you can go follow us on Twitter at Tag Team Pokemon. You can also follow each one of us individually at Andrew Mahone, at EnjoyFriend, that's Andrew's handle, at Real John Walter, that is my handle, and at Smiles with Riles for our good pal, Riley.
Thank you so much for tuning in to perhaps the most unhinged episode of Tag Team. We'll catch you all next time.